From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 9th day of July. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlow at GlobalComResearch.com. Check in on the weed situation with Aaron Hager, weed scientist here on campus, and talk about fungicide applications and whether they should or should not be made and what high risk might be. That with Nathan Klucheski. He's a plant pathologist at GrowMark, and as we wrap up our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrient Ag Solutions in Dagrable on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn today in Chicago finished 6 3/4 of a cent lower at $5.17. November, $13.29 1/4, up 9 3/4. Bean meal down 3.60. The bean oil for the day at $1.76 higher. Soft red winter wheat down 3 at $6.15. The hard red up 6 at $5.94. And spring wheat at $8.15, a dime higher on the afternoon. Live cattle futures at 119.22.5, finished a nickel lower for the day. The feeders at 159.17.5, down a dollar, rather up a dollar 85, and lean hogs at $101.57.5, a dollar and 20 cents higher. Gold futures at $1,810.90, up $10.70. Crude oil at $74.48 a barrel. That's about $1.56 higher. Heating oil or diesel fuel up 3 4/10 at $2.15.5, and the wholesale price of gasoline at $2.29 2/10 per gallon, up 3 7/10. Ethanol futures at $2.32, finished unchanged on the afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report, of course. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online, listen to us on demand whenever you'd like. You can do that at willag.org. That's willag.org. Mike Zuzlow, GlobalComResearch.com, out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us. Thank you, Mike. What'd you make of the marketplace for the day?
Well, I think for the day, Todd, is pretty much for the week. You know, we've dropped about 15% since the high pre-July 4th holiday in the July corn. We took out the June lows of that 629.5 level, an important level. Even with good export sales, even with good soybean price action, even with good hard red wheat price action, this suggests to me that the funds are liquidating pretty substantially going into the report. We will find out, I think, whether they're on the right track or not based upon how the USDA treats not just the Brazilian corn number, but also the total demand number, because I think there's some of that mix in there. But I think especially the spring wheat, I really think the spring wheat is in a serious problem area at this stage, and it would not be surprising to me to see a yield much lower than what we are looking at right now, and it could shave enough off of the production on wheat. I'm saying about a 1.9 crop, all wheat crop, could be shaved down to a 1.7 all wheat crop, because hard red spring is about 30% of all wheat production in the United States. So spring wheat, hard red wheat, need to come in and help the corn out here as we get the report numbers.
Is your thought here that would lift wheat out of the feed wheat area and cost economically, and then would support the corn market?
Yeah, perfect point and a perfect question. Right now, July soft red minus corn is 19.20 under. You go to SEP though, Todd, we're back up to 90 cents positive wheat above corn. That's exactly what I'm thinking at this stage, is that we need the market to wake up and realize that all supplies of grains are still very tight, especially if we come in with a lower Brazilian corn number.
And how low do you think that'll be? The Brazilians are at 93.4 million tons now. USDA at its last WASDE was at 98.6, I believe.
Yeah, that's right, 98.5, 98.6. I think that we'll go below 90, but I'm not prepared for that until maybe another couple months from now. I put the number at 92.2 for clients, and for the corn estimates for domestically, I'm giving clients a 1.44 carryover and a 187 bean carryover heading into Monday's numbers. And, you know, that's with some decline in yield. And I think that's the big question, is not just what we get for rains over the weekend, but what USDA gives us for the yields minus total demand, because those acreage numbers, they've been kind of thrown out except for the soybeans. But in corn, I don't think they even think about acres at this point.
Are you of a mind that USDA will actually lower that 179.5 this time around?
No, I don't think that at all. I think that's where it goes back to, you know, planning with bought puts. If we can't get back up above those technical support levels that we just took out today in the corn market, and, you know, using puts instead of cash related sales and just biding your time to get the U.S. numbers and the world numbers to come together so that the market realizes that being at, you know, roughly $5 Dease corn prices is probably not a good idea at this point. And as we said in Commodity Week yesterday when we taped that, I really think we could be doing this all over again with soybeans in August, because that crop looks pretty tough around the United States for the most part. A very short crop and a lot of problem potential.
Anything that you think producers ought to be considering?
Well, I think it goes back to the discipline and the humility of what we're dealing with in this market right now. We've got so many different factors, you know, hitting us right now. It's not just all about weather, and I think that's what this week showed us. To take 15% off the corn price, and really, is that all about just Iowa rains? And I really don't think it is, and I think that's what we have to integrate into our marketing plan.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Have a great weekend.
You too. That's Mike Zuzlow. He's with GlobalComResearch.com. Well, over the noon hour each Friday, the Illinois Extension Commercial Ag Team gathers by teleconference to discuss what's happening across the state. I'll play for you just a little bit of what Aaron Hager, weed scientist, had to say today. And then we'll follow up with Nathan Klucheski, who was the plant pathologist at the U of I, but now is working with GrowMark. I did check with him about fungicide applications because I know many farmers are being pressured to put those on. You'll want to pay attention to what Nathan considers a high-risk situation, corn on corn, but put that in context of your fungicide decisions and what that really means. Now, here's Aaron Hager.
Not a lot coming in terms of calls. Had a couple issues, I think, or a couple of questions around activity of 2,4-D on amarantha species. I talked with Robert Bellum about 10 days ago, and he sent a rather disturbing photograph of a patch of water hemp that had dead plants, live plants, sort of a oval in size photograph. Generally speaking, if you're looking for a textbook kind of a photograph of the onset of the resistance evolution, that would be what it would look like. But not really terribly unexpected. A couple here in the last day or two about glufosinate having some poor activity on some amarantha species. We haven't really been able to follow up other than a couple of phone conversations, but we may have access to get some seed samples and maybe do some greenhouse screening this fall and winter. So I think with that, I'll stop and see if anybody has any questions.
This odd spring weather that we've had, has it brought forth any weeds that we don't normally see in, at least in abundance?
Not really. Emerson, in the travels that I've had around the state, really the suite, if you would, of weeds that we see really hasn't changed terribly much. I did kind of a habit that I've gotten into. We worked on a field of Palmer amaranth. It was north of Route 17, about 15 or so miles west of Kankakee. And I think we pulled out of that area in 2016, 2017 timeframe. And at least once a year, I try to go back and just see what's happening in the area around that field. For the 3 years I worked that we had plots on that location, really that was the only field that I could ever really find a lot of evidence that Palmer was there. Now, yesterday when I drove by it, unfortunately now I can see Palmer on the edges of fields up to about a mile and a half away from that field. So it tends to be, not surprisingly, I think, moving around a little bit. I didn't get out in the fields, couldn't really see anything overtopping the corn in the field, but, you know, certainly capable of moving. You know, delayed mowing of the rows just allows these females to get larger. And if, you know, if they're mowed down once they have seed on it, those batwing mowers are really, really good seed transporters. But other than that, really, I guess not anything, Emerson, that has been startling or a lot of folks have really asked about. Is there anything that you've seen in particular that?
No, not really. Okay. Corn is about as noticeable as anything in bean fields. So.
Yeah.
But I haven't, you know, it's the wheat, the beans grew pretty slowly and pretty poorly, but they're taking off now. So.
Yeah. Not any more this year than in the past probably 5 years. But yeah, it seems like we've seen a bit of a, I don't know if I should call it a resurgence or not, of velvet leaf in soybean fields. That's not unique to Illinois. We get together as an extension weeds group every fall in September. And we always talk about, you know, is anybody seeing any, you know, different types of species? And several states, I think it was 2 years ago when we met on that particular question and topic, several states reported they're also seeing a higher frequency of velvet leaf now in soybean. Not really sure why.
Hey, Aaron, can you talk a little bit about what the University of Arkansas has found with Palmer and resistance to the glufosinates?
There's been at least one, if not two, populations that I believe it was Dr. Barber has isolated or discovered, and they've actually been able to confirm glufosinate resistance. This is in Palmer amaranth and not in water hemp. And then Dr. Steckel across the river in Tennessee has confirmed dicamba resistance in several populations of Palmer that he deals with there in the western side of the state. So it doesn't always hold true, but as a general rule of thumb, when Larry finds something in western Tennessee or Tom or Jason finds something in Arkansas, it's usually about 1 or 2 years later, we find something fairly similar to it in water hemp here in Illinois. So, you know, stands to reason, I guess, if that trend line continues to hold, and we may be looking for something around the glufosinate resistance here in Illinois pretty soon.
That was Aaron Hager, weed scientist from the University of Illinois, along with agronomist Emerson Nafziger, who asked a question, myself too, during today's noon hour discussion with the commercial ag team as it relates to what's been happening across the state in the farm fields. One of the other things I checked on earlier today were fungicide applications, because I know many producers are being pushed to make those applications. Nathan Klucheski is the plant pathologist, or was the plant pathologist here on campus, now works for GrowMark. I had him send me an audio file as to his thoughts as it's related to when and if a fungicide should be used on corn.
So right now we're getting a lot of questions about fungicide applications, particularly in corn. And one of the reasons we're getting these questions is because we have had a lot of wet weather recently. We've got crops that are starting to enter that critical phase of growth where they're going to be tasseling or have started tasseling already. And the forecast in the future looks like in the next, in many parts of Illinois at least, in the next couple of weeks potentially could have a fairly high chance for precipitation events as well as some moderate temperatures. And because of that, if we think of our disease triangle, that means that if we're in a situation where we're corn after corn with a susceptible hybrid and maybe these initial rains have started up disease, getting out, especially in those high-risk fields, with a fungicide could be something that could be a really good decision this year, particularly if those rains come through for us. Okay, and the idea here is we need to protect those tissues from the ear leaf all the way to the top of the canopy, because that's going to be providing about 90% of our carbohydrates to fill our grain. And corn is extremely susceptible to stress during that period from VT all the way through, you know, R4 is really critical. Okay, so if we can get ourselves protection of diseases that may be potentially flaring up for 2-3 weeks there, maybe a little bit more, hold those back, we'll end up pushing that disease curve back so that they don't reach an economic injury level causing yield losses before we hit black layers. So that's the key here. The diseases we need to be keeping an eye out for, and I say get out in your fields and look now, especially if you're in a high-risk situation. Look for northern corn leaf blight and gray leaf spot. You'll see those. You will see common rust. Do not be concerned about common rust. Southern rust is still pretty far away. It's in, relative to our area, it's out in eastern, kind of southeast Kansas right now. I don't expect that to be a problem for us right now. The other one we need to keep an eye out on, especially those in the northern part of the state where it's been really cool and they've been getting a lot of rain, is tar spot. And that has started to show up. It's still very early where it has shown up in terms of the amount of disease. But that is one where it takes 2-3 weeks. It'll be low in terms of the incidence in a field. And then once you start getting a particular level, once leaves tend to get about 3-5% severity on them across the field, then it will blow up and it can take off really fast. And so we want to make sure that those fields in that are showing tar spot, the history of tar spot, that are going to be tasseling here in the next week or two, that we're definitely looking at whether or not, you know, they have tar spot showing up and potentially making an application there. Best timing for a fungicide application that's going to get you the best return on your investment, and this is coming from university research where they're really trying to push disease, really high risk situations. It's going to be VT to, that VTR1's the best timing. In situations where maybe, you can't get in the field or disease isn't showing up and you haven't made an application, you can still make one, up to like R3 if weather starts to take off, and you can still potentially see a benefit. But you're going to get the best return on your investment when you're making an application, right when those tassels and silks are starting to pop out there within a few days after. Revenge sprays don't work. Remember, once you have tissue that's infected or tissue that is dead from gray leaf spot or northern corn leaf blight, you can't heal that. It won't grow back. And so the idea here, like I said, go out there and scout. If you're at high risk and we're looking like we're in a period here where we're going to have several events of rain in the next few weeks, it might be a good opportunity or a good idea to consider a fungicide application. If you're not seeing any disease, you have a resistant hybrid, you're rotating corn with soybeans and potentially using tillage, that's going to put you at a low risk for disease, and you're less likely to see a return on investment just because you're less likely to see major amounts of disease. But again, the key here is scouting. All right, so get out there, get out in your field, get a good tan, get a good farmer tan going, and that'll be a great opportunity for you to see what's happening in your field, make some informed decisions here in the growing season.
That's Nathan Klucheski. I worked with him here on campus. He's a plant pathologist before he went to his current position at GrowMark. He did tell me that he created a few weeks ago a risk calculator, and I will post that link once I find the calculator into the Will Ag website and into the @CommodityWeek Twitter account. So look for that this afternoon, and you can evaluate the risk in your fields, but corn after corn, most certainly one of the places to look and make sure there is something out there in your field that you're trying to spray for, rather than just prophylactically using a fungicide that's going to cost probably $30 an acre, or five to six bushels, maybe more, to pay for if you do. Eric Snodgrass now joins us to take a look at the weather forecast for the coming weeks across the Corn Belt. Thank you, Eric, for being with us. He, of course, is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Hope you're having a great day.
Yeah, I am. I'm still in the north woods of Wisconsin. One more day up here, and I've got a sweatshirt on this morning. So that tells you how this pattern's set up right now.
Yeah, so a little cooler. There has been some rainfall. Let's start with what that rainfall looked like. I know you had maybe a day up there or so, but it's been in the northern part of the Corn Belt, which was really in need.
Yeah, it was. And so what the rainfall bought that area was a pretty significant improvement in topsoil moisture, which was good. But I'll make a point to say that it wasn't as though everybody got rain. So in other words, the Red River Valley of the North needs quite a bit more. Pockets of South Dakota, which up until this point had the driest June through early July on record. I'm talking, we have 130 years worth of data, and that's how dry it has been in that area. So the rain that came through there was very beneficial. But remember, some of those storms put down some big hail in parts of the western Dakotas. But it's rain. It did rain in that area. And so some folks are really going to get some help out of that. And in the near term here, we've got this cooler weather that's in place, right? You know, just a few days after the 4th of July. So that'd be about the perfect thing you can dial up, right? Some rain and some cooler weather after the 4th.
Yeah, just about perfect. And because most of the crop is running, I think, a little ahead. Well, the planting season went pretty well. Pollination is coming in the next now to 3 weeks, and I'm wondering what that period looks like.
Well, in the near term here, we've got some wet weather coming to us at the end of this week and over the weekend, and that's going to be, you know, centered right here in Illinois where this little low pressure, I shouldn't say little, this low pressure system is going to curl up, and it's going to bring in chance for some stronger storms. We're going to have to watch out for that early this weekend, but then multiple rounds of rain. And then after that, the fact that the heat is staying west, I mean, this is just, you know, Carl Gustav Rossby, he's kind of one of the founding fathers of meteorology. One of the things he discovered was the typical wavelength of a weather system in the mid-latitudes. And what he learned was it's about two-thirds of the width of the United States. So why I'm telling you that is if we keep pushing big ridges over the west and anchoring heat over the west, we're always on the downstream side of that. And as we go here to the middle part of this month, it looks as though our next couple of weeks are going to give us more chances of rain than not. And that's going to come with near normal to maybe even some cooler temperatures here. And that's going to be about perfect. Now, if you're in the northern plains, I don't see the same scenario. I actually see heat building back in, kind of coming over that ridge into the Canadian prairie, into the northern plains. And therefore, that's going to be an area that's going to go back under stress. And they've certainly, as we all know, have been under a lot of stress so far this growing season. But you look downstream of that, and that's right here in the I states, especially in Illinois, and we're looking pretty good.
Anything else we ought to discuss for the day?
Well, you know, I think when I look globally, there's a couple of issues happening. You know, one thing would be what's going on over in parts of Ukraine. They had a pretty good spring and early summer. Now they're going real hot and dry. I think that's going to start to become a story here at some point. And I think the big thing that's going to be on a lot of our minds going forward for the next several months is historically La Niñas happen in kind of pairs of two. In other words, you have a winter La Niña. It fades in the following spring and summer, then comes back for the next fall and winter. Some of the latest data suggests that we're going to be dealing with La Niña conditions this fall and winter. That's going to mean possibility of a very active hurricane season, which we've been discussing, but maybe some hints of last winter showing up again this winter. Now, that's very preliminary, but that's typically what we get with a La Niña pattern. Cooler winters, possibly some more snowfall. So we've got a lot to be talking about here. And I think the bigger impact is going to be on South America. So that La Niña forecast, which just adjusted this last couple of weeks here for the later time period this year, I think it's going to be one of the more important things to talk about.
Hey, thank you. We appreciate it. Glad you're having fun up in the northern parts of Wisconsin.
Yeah, thank you.
And, of course, is Eric Snodgrass. He's with Nutrient Ag Solutions and Agrible. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.